Okay, welcome to Contemporary Halacha on Brain Death. We're zochet to have Rabbi Dr. Shalter, the musmach of our yeshiva and a graduate of Mount Sinai,
NYU
School of Medicine. I apologize. He's presently in the learning here in yeshiva and teaching medical halacha in other universities around the New York State area, which will remain nameless for the moment, and is actually the author of the definitive book on brain death, which is defining the moment, which I hope we'll have for sale after the shiur. I do have one. I did buy one. And if you ever want to give a shiur on it, or you want to have to paskin on these terrible shah that somebody might have to paskin on, this will give you a lot of perspective. So, B'chol Rav, pleasure to have Rabbi Dr. David Shabtai.
Okay. thank you very much. It's always an honor to give a shiur in your yeshiva. So just want to before we start, I just want to mention what I'm going to try to do, and then what I'm not going to try to do. What I'm going to try to do is I have three goals with the shiur. The first is to understand what the relevant questions are in determining. Really, it's a shiur about determining the time of death, not necessarily it's going to be about brain death, but determining the time of death. So understanding what the relevant questions are, what we should be asking, what are the relevant factors. The second goal is to understand what we'll develop as three different approaches to determining the time of death. And the third one is, aside from just understanding what the shittas are, to learn where they come from. What I am not going to do is I am not going to paskin any shaylos whatsoever. I don't intend to paskin any shaylos whatsoever. I don't intend to tell you what's right or what's wrong. One thing I will start off with, saying that the only thing that I will be fair to disagree with this entire shiur comes from, this is actually a very, very good book. It's a collection of articles and Ma'amarim on issues related to brain death. This is what the Rabbanut HaRashit of Israel in 1987 published a piece that we'll talk about. They supported brain death. And one of the paragraphs, they say the following. Kafisha Yotzeh Merachomer Dilel is at the end of their piece. Bor she'ein kan she'ela hilchatit mesubechet. She'esh laharech bebiur mitoch sugyas hashas farishonim. There's nothing complicated to talk about. You don't really need to bring rayas from Shas and Poskim. El hadvarim pshutim od. So, I disagree. It's not Pashut Mod. The Haraya that they even had to write a six-page letter, and that many of the Poskim disagree about what the Metzius is exactly, and what the Halacha should be. So that's the only thing I'm going to be fair to disagree about. I don't think it's simple. But again, we're not going to pass the Halacha. I want to see the three different approaches, and what you should do. If you look, the first page here is just what I have as my conclusion of my book, which is not really a conclusion at all, because I don't intend to paskin the Shaila. You should ask your Rav, and they should guide you into how to paskin. But the goal here is not to paskin, it's to understand what the different approaches are and where they come from. So the first issue we have to deal with is, how do you know if somebody is dead? So why do we care if someone's dead? So Al Pidin, we need to care a lot. There's a Tumah, starts at the moment of death. Yerusha, also the mitzvah of Kvura, must start at the moment of death. When does that start from? So how do we ascertain with precision the moment of death? So this might seem like a little bit of a silly exercise, but I think it proves a point. And I think it's a point that in the secular bioethics world, they didn't really realize till 1981. There was a seminal paper published on this issue. But I think Rashi in Yuma Pehei picked up on this. So if you walk into an ICU, an intensive care unit, and you walk around, you see a lot of patients lying there connected to a whole bunch of different machinery, and most of them are not awake and speaking, they're just lying there. So how do you know if they're alive or dead? Good.
Heart monitors.
So what are you looking for? You're looking for a heartbeat. So you can't see a heartbeat, so you're looking for the EKG to see the reflection on the, you want to see the EKG recording a heart rhythm. What else might you be looking for?
Breathing.
You want to see if the person is breathing. So you can't see if the person, you can't, breathing is a process. You can't see breathing, but you can see if there's a monitor to measure breathing, or you can go up to them and see, and you can feel the breath, right? You can do a test to determine whether the patient's breathing, right? You can go and you can put your face to them, or you can put your hand or a feather or a mirror back in the day, and you can see whether the patient's breathing. So too with the heart, you want to see if, you look at the heart monitor to see if the patient has a heartbeat. You might want to look at a pulse, right? A pulse is also a sign. You can see if the person, you can feel a pulse, you assume that the heart is beating. You might want to look for a brain activity. How would tell brain activity? The person's talking to you, so their brain is functioning, right? That's a given. Everyone agrees. If they're talking to you, they're conscious, they're reacting to stimuli, it means that their brain is working. You want to know if the brain is working, so then you can do a test and see what they're doing. But why are any of these things important? Why are we looking at the heart? Why are we looking at breathing? Why are we looking at the brain? What does that mean? We're doing a test to find out whether some physiological function is happening, But which function should we be looking for? So there's a big machlokes, which it's not only machlokes by us, it's a machlokes in the whole world. What function are you precisely looking for? And whatever you'll say breathing, you'll say heartbeat, you'll say neurological function, I'll ask you why. And if you think about it, you can't really answer why with any medical information whatsoever. Well, why is breathing the most important? Or why is the heartbeat the most important? Well, you need to breathe to stay alive, right? Well, you also need a heartbeat to stay alive. But that's circular, because I asked you what makes you alive. So why is the heartbeat the most important? Why is breathing the most important? So you have to give a svara. You have to give some explanation why you think that's important. Now, once I'm asking you to give me an explanation of why you think that's important, it's an opinion, right? Based on that let's say we believe that the neshama is found, neshama is found in breathing. So we believe that the neshama is found in breathing, and therefore, we want to know when the patient stopped breathing, we assume the neshama left. So what am I really looking for? Looking for Yetzias neshama. I walk into the ICU, and I don't have my local makubal with me, so I can't tell when the Yetzias neshama happened. So what do I look for? I look for other signs of the Yetzias neshama. What I want to know is Yetzias neshama. But I can't measure that, so I have to find out. But you could see that somebody might argue on that nakuda, on what am I actually, why are these things important? And that's why different groups of people have different opinions as to what really we're looking for. And the most important part of that is, wait a minute, that's not a question of medicine or science whatsoever. Why is something important? Why is that the criteria I'm looking for? It doesn't have to be one criteria, it could be one factor, it could be a whole bunch of different things that represent Yetzias Neshama. I have no idea. I'm looking for Yetzias Neshama. Somebody else might be looking for, well, the person is no longer speaking, and Mosar Adam in Abeim Ayin, the difference is Ruach Malof, he can't speak, so then he must be dead. That's the only important part. Now, we could argue, but it's a question of values, it's a question of trying to figure out what's important to me and what's important to you. It's not a question of science anymore. So when we're trying to figure out when the moment of death is, we're not actually asking a scientific question. I'm really asking, what is important that makes a person alive? What is it about a human being that makes him alive, and when that's missing, that they're dead? It's not a question that science can answer. It's a question that you need a philosophical reason, an ethical reason, what we would call a halachic reason. And that's why it's important to know in halacha, this is a halachic question. It's not a scientific question. In 1968, this country, the Harvard Medical School had an ad hoc committee for the determination of brain death, and they decided that brain death was death. And we'll talk about that in a minute. And there was a bunch of doctors who got together and did that. And from then on, we assumed that this was a medical question because, you know, doctors have to tell me when the patient's dead. And they kind of didn't think about it past that. And for a long time, well, it was we thought about it as a medical question. And therefore, well, when is the person dead? We have to ask a doctor when he's dead. Well, what's the doctor looking for? He's looking for the heartbeat. Why is he looking for the heartbeat? Medicine can't answer why questions. Medicine can only answer what or how questions. It can't answer why. Why has to give you a meaning. Medicine cannot answer a meaning question. It has to be measurable in order for medicine to give you an answer. When is a person alive or when is he dead has nothing to do with measuring. Now, I might tell you that when the baby is considered and the fetus is considered to be alive, it's when it has a heartbeat, let's say. So you need a doctor to tell me when that happens. But he can only do the practical part of when it happens. I have to determine what the important part is. So fine. So now we know that we've established at least that it's at least halacha has to have something to say. Yeah.
Rashi?
Sure.
What was that Rashi exactly saying?
We'll get to the Rashi. Don't worry. We'll get to the Rashi. The Rashi's nakuda was that we'll get to the Rashi in a minute. Don't worry about the Rashi. Fine. So now my point in that was just saying that we have to look to halacha for this. It's not a medical question. This is a religious philosophical question. For us, that's a halacha question. So why do we care again? We care because for a lot of halachic reasons, we need to know the precise moment of death very precisely. We also need to know because of organ donation. So we know that there are many patients waiting for organs in this country who are in some type of organ failure. Their organs are not recoverable. They're not working at all. As of the last time I checked, there were at least 110,000 patients in the United States waiting for organs. Now, the only refuah that they have as a real refuah, meaningful refuah, is to get an organ transplant. Their organs are not salvageable. They need to have them replaced. So where do you get organs from? So you can get organs from a living person, a kidney. That was last year's year. Every single healthy person has two kidneys. Every person is born with, most people, at least, everyone should be born with two kidneys. And a healthy person only needs one to survive. You can donate one to somebody else. Out of those 110-some-odd people waiting for organs, 90-something thousand of them are waiting for kidneys. That's a very significant percentage. They can all be saved by living healthy people. And just a plug that kidney donors on average live longer than the average American. That's a fact. If you donate your kidney and you only have one, on average you will live longer than the average American. So just quickly, I think there are two reasons for that. I think the first reason is that you did the ultimate act of giving of yourself or somebody else. You did the koch nefesh. There is hashkacha. There is schar v'onesh v'olam hazeh, I guess, a little bit. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of you. Mitzad sheni, if you are eligible to be a kidney donor, you are probably healthier than the average American to begin with. And so you're going to live, you would have lived longer anyway. But I do believe there's a side of hashkacha, yeah. Yes, that too. We do take care of kidney donors better than we take care of some people. A little bit better also. But that could all be part of the hashgacha. But we're not going to talk about that. We're not going to talk about healthy people. So let's say you need to take a heart out of somebody, right? So you can live with one kidney. You can't live without a heart. So if I take the heart out of somebody, that person dies. So I can't. If I take the heart out of one person, he dies. So even if it's a nice thing to save somebody else's life, we're not allowed to kill one person to save another. Topic for another time, never ever under any circumstances, no matter how sick the donor is, whether they're dying now, they're dying in 5 minutes, they're dying in 1 second, we're not allowed to be mechayev misaso by one moment, and therefore we cannot take the heart out of any living person in order to give it to another person to save their life. We're taking that as a given. We're not going to talk about that anymore. So fine, so, you know, we live in the country, there are many, many people die every single day, so why not take organs out of the dead people, right? The dead person does not need his heart anymore. He can give, or he or she can give that heart to someone who needs it, whose heart is failing, and thereby save their life. Yes, there is an iser of nivel ames. You're not allowed to be a nivel ames, and to remove a heart from a mace would certainly be nivel ames, seemingly according to oral poskim. However, it's b'mokah b'koach nefesh, so b'mokah b'koach nefesh would violate nivel ames. So that would be a simple solution. There are plenty of people who die all the time. Why not take their organs? So practically, yeah.
That's so simple. I mean, we can't steal to save
stuff. Okay, so let's say with permission. So stealing is an interesting question. Do I need permission or not permission? Alpi din. Alpi American law, I certainly need permission. Alpi din, the shaila is much more complicated. Why would I need permission? And who would I need permission from?
I thought we said that if you go up that you can't, like if there's a fire, you can't.
Yes, so you're referring to the Binyan Siyan's position. The Binyan Siyan says you're not allowed to take organs from somebody. You're not allowed to be Menavel Mace in order to save life. Almost all the posts can disagree with that, and we are Menavel Mace to save lives. The question would be, if I need permission, who do I need permission from? The person's dead. So who am I stealing from? Do I need the family's resources? It's a little bit complicated. Not our issue. Let's say we have consent. There are plenty of people who die every day who would give consent, so it's not an issue. The practical problem is that those organs are no good. If you take organs from a dead person, they're no good. There's a reason this person is dead. Right, his heart's not beating anymore. Well, why isn't it beating anymore? No, it could be because he got shot in the head or something. But right, or an accident, and his heart's perfectly fine. But now it's not working. Right, now he's laying there. Why is his heart not working? Well, after he got shot in the head, something must have happened to him. Rushed to the hospital, they couldn't save him. His heart stopped working. So as soon as the heart stops beating, right, the heart circulates blood throughout the body. When you breathe, you take in oxygen. The oxygen mixes with the blood. The heart sends oxygenated blood throughout the body. The oxygenated blood gives energy to all of your cells to live. So once that stops happening and oxygenated blood stops reaching your organs, the organs start to die. The organs just don't work anymore. So after a couple of moments, minutes, whatever, they measure these things, if you waited till the heart stopped and then took it out, it's not good anymore. That heart is no good because it already started dying. Happens to be, again, that kidneys can actually last for a little bit without blood flow. And so kidneys you might actually be able to take from a dead guy, completely dead, and then transplant them into a recipient. So kidneys are, same as boch and kleios, there's a reason, and the kleios are different, again. But we're talking about, let's say, hearts and lungs that you can't take out, or at least heart, you can't take out from a living person without killing them. So what should we possibly do? So what could be an eitza? So one eitza would be, well, what if you had a heart-beating cadaver? You had a dead person whose heart was beating, right? That would be perfect. If I had a dead person whose heart was beating, it would help me in both ways, because when I take out his heart, I didn't kill him, because he's already dead, right? You can't kill a dead person. If I take out his heart, he's already dead. And I get the myla that the oxygenated blood is still circulating throughout the body. The heart is still a living tissue. It's going to work when I put it back into the recipient. So that's the ideal situation. Could you have such a thing as a heart-beating cadaver? That's what we're looking for, if such a thing could exist. And in 1968, the Harvard Ad Hoc Committee for the Determination of Brain Death decided that, in fact, it can exist. They said the following. So And he said, you can have a matzah. So we have two systems. There's a circulatory system to run blood through the body. Sorry for the boring biology part. We'll try to do it in 3 minutes. And there's a respiratory system where you get oxygen. You breathe in air. Oxygen comes into your lungs. Blood goes by your lungs. That oxygen goes into your blood. Blood goes back to your heart. Your heart pushes it throughout the whole body. You need both to work. Not only do you need oxygen, you also need your heart to pump. Because if you just breathe in without heart pumping, so you breathe in oxygen, it doesn't get anywhere. And if your heart's pumping without breathing in, so you're pumping deoxygenated blood throughout the body, you're not keeping yourself alive. You need both systems to function to live a healthy life. Now, why does each one happen? Again, because medicine can't tell me that. But how does each one start? So how do you take a breath? Your brain sends a signal to the muscles around the lungs, and it takes a breath. Right? Down the phrenic nerve, it sends a signal whether you're awake or not. Right? Asleep, when you're still asleep, your heart, you still breathe when you're asleep. You can watch someone else sleep to find out. Right? Your brain still sends a signal down to your lung, to the musculature around your lungs, to take a breath. Now you can override that. Right, everyone thinks about it for a second. You can take a deep breath. I can override my brain sending a signal, but sometimes I pass out. If I pass out, it means my brain says, stop being silly. You're holding your breath for too long. I'm going to knock you to the floor and stop you overriding my signal. I want to send that signal for you to breathe. So no matter what you do, that your brain needs to send a signal to your lungs to breathe. Your heart, however, does not need any signal to beat. The heart will beat all on its own. It has a property known as automaticity, from the word automatic. It will beat all on its own, without a signal from the brain whatsoever. Now, the brain can speed up or slow down the heart, right? If you start running, your heart will beat faster. When you slow down, your heart beats slower because your brain's sending a signal. There's also a bunch of hormones involved that's a little bit slower. But it can speed up or slow down. It does not need any signal from the brain. In fact, when you do a heart transplant, you take a heart from one of these patients, right? In the American, this is legal, and we do this. And according to some postings, it's mutter. So you take a heart from this brain-dead person, and you put it into the recipient. You don't connect the heart to the recipient's brain in any way. And the heart continues to beat just as fine. Right? So when the heart transplant patient who received the heart starts running, his heart or her heart does not start beating faster because there's no connection to the brain. It's beating normally. It can't get faster or slower until the hormones kick in a little bit later.
So there's no direct neurological activity from the brain to the heart.
Initiate a beat.
Right. So
it can modulate a beat.
The hormones that are...
Also modulate a beat.
Is that?
They can also modulate the beat. Adrenaline can make it go faster or slower, but never start a beat.
So would that be considered from the neurologically that's the source?
It's an endocrine source. It's not starting a beat. It's all inherent to the heart itself. Even if you had no hormones, your heart would be fine. So now they say, well, what happens if we can separate the two, right? We can have a patient who can't breathe for whatever reason, and we can put them on the ventilator. A ventilator is just a machine that pumps air in and out of their lungs. Can't breathe at all. And we can pump air in and out of their lungs. And if I do that, I put a tube down the throat, I provide air in and out of their lungs, their heart, the rest of their body should continue beating fine. Now, the Harvard committee said that if you have a patient whose brain is injured so much that they're permanently unconscious, right? We assume that it's permanent, there's no chance of them coming back. Let's take that as a given. They cannot breathe on their own, meaning the part of the brain that sends a signal to breathe is dead. It's not working. And they have no spinal cord reflexes, even an extra myelin of... The brain is completely out of it. Even if the heart is continuing to beat, these people are dead. And that is a status known as brain death. Brain death means that the person is permanently unconscious, cannot breathe on their own, right, because they cannot be on a ventilator, and they have no brainstem reflexes. These people are considered brain dead, and in 1968, the Harvard Committee suggested that these people be considered dead, and this was adopted as law in all 50 states, that these patients are considered dead. And so the question is how do we view that in halacha? So much for the science. Is there any question about the science? Okay. So everyone understands what's going on. So that's what's going on. We need to know what's happening. So we have a patient who can't breathe on their own, but whose heart is still beating. Yeah.
So what they would do is in that case, they would put them on the ventilator to get the oxygen to the heart, and then they could take the organs out?
Yeah. So what happens usually is an accident victim or something like this. They take him to the hospital, right? And they don't know what's wrong with him. And they try to get him back together, right? And so brain death is a process. It doesn't happen instantly. It takes a long time till the brain swells. There's a whole back and forth. It's not postured. It takes a long time, right, to develop. But we're trying to save the patient in the meantime. So the patient's on the ventilator because we put every patient who can't breathe on the ventilator. We don't know what's going to be with them. We want to try our best. So we give them the ventilator to breathe for them because they can't breathe on their own. And then after a little bit of time, we discover that their brain is not functioning and the brain can't send signals. So now the ventilator is sending oxygen into the lungs. The oxygen is getting into the blood. The heart keeps pumping. The rest of the body keeps working fine. It's just that the brain is not sending any signals whatsoever. So any other part of the body that needs brain signals to function is also not working, right? But most of the vegetative functions of the body, digestion, growth, hormone activity, fetal growth even, pregnant women, the baby continues to grow, can function just fine without any signal from the brain. And so the rest of the body seems to be functioning fine. To move and talk, you need a brain to signal. This person's not doing any of that because their brain's out. But the rest of the body is functioning just fine. So we have a patient who cannot breathe on their own. Yeah?
If you have a brain-dead pregnant woman, she could continue to turn and then have the child.
Yeah. Yeah. If we have time, we'll talk about that. She won't be able to push, right? But they could do a C-section and the baby could come out fine. And we'll talk about that. If we have time, we'll talk about Shlomo Zalman, because that was his big kasha. Fine. Okay, so what we have now is, again, we have a patient who can't breathe on their own and who has a heartbeat. And the inability to breathe on their own, so the term I used for it is irreversible cessation of spontaneous respiration. Just important to think about that for a minute. It's irreversible. We assume that all of these things are irreversible. We're assuming that we have 100% accuracy. We have a nevuah. We know that this is not coming back. Cessation of spontaneous respiration. That means breathing on your own, right? We can pump the person full of oxygen, but that's not respiration. That's not spontaneous respiration. So not breathe. This person is suffering from irreversible cessation of spontaneous respiration, but they have a heartbeat. So what is going to be the din of that? So the difficulty is that we don't really have any sugyas that talk about this, because this can only develop in the context of where I have a ventilator, right? This only exists when I have a ventilator where I could actually keep oxygen flowing and the heart beating. Ventilators weren't developed till not so long ago, well after the Gemara had been finished writing, and so we have to look for clues to see what the sugya is. What the story is going to be. So if you look on the second page here, and it's a Mishnah in Yuma, Pegimel Amud Aleph. The middle of the Mishnah says Mishnah Nafla Alav Mapolas. So someone who is under a building collapse, Safek Usham, Safek Enosham, and we're not sure if he's there, Safek Chai, Safek Meis, all sorts of sfeikas. We don't know if he's alive or dead. Safek Kusi, Safek Yisrael, Mifachin Lava Sagal, you're allowed to violate Shabbos or Yom Kippur to remove the rubble to get to this person. What malacha that is, I'm not terribly interested right now. We can talk about it later. There is a malacha d'oraisa necessary. You can violate any malacha necessary, d'oraisa necessary to save this person's life. Mitzahu Chai, so if you aren't covering the rubble and you find him alive, so Mifachin, you keep going because you're going to save his life. The Imeis, but if you find out that he's dead, Yanichuhu. You can't continue anymore because a mace is not only muktzah, but you're not allowed to save his life. You're not saving his life. You can't bury him on Shabbos. You have to anyway. You have to wait till after. So a mace yanichu and deal with it after Shabbos. Okay. So the Gemara on the next page, on page 3 in the packet, wants to know what exactly are we talking about. This is Yuma Pehe Amud Aleph. So Okay. I've done this in the past. I number the lines, and so I got thrown off a bit. So if you look in the middle of the page here, it says Tana Rabbanan. Ad Eichanu Bodek. It says V'im Chai Mefakchin. V'im Meisi Anichu. If he's alive, you keep going. If he's dead, you should stop. So how do you know if he's alive or not? Where do you check until? Remember, you're uncovering rubble, so you're not going to uncover the whole body all at once. So Ad Eichanu Bodek. How do you know? Right, Rashi is going to tell us. The guy looks like he's dead. Right, if he's sitting there and screaming and yelling, "Please save me," then I know he's alive. I don't have to go and uncover him. Right, that's obvious, but not so obvious. Right, how do you know he looks dead? So he could be that he got hit in the head. He could be that he's just lying there. How do you know if he's alive or not? So ad chotmo v'yesh omrim ad libo. So one, the first man d'amar says you check until his nose. The second man d'amar says you check until his heart. Presumably, again. I'm going to assume if you're checking for his nose, you're checking for breathing. If you're checking his heart, you're checking for a heartbeat. I think that's a fair assumption. It's not explicit in the Gemara, but I think that's a fair assumption. So, So you don't have a stethoscope, so you're going to put your hand on his chest, but your ear on his chest. You're going to feel, yeah. So it's a good question. We'll get to that. The Gemara will elaborate in a minute. So let's just assume that they're exclusive positions. When ad libo means just the heart, and ad chotmo means just the nose. So it sounds like this is good for the question we're asking. If he's not breathing, is he dead? Or is if he doesn't have a heartbeat, is he dead? Which is precisely the question we want to know. We have a patient who is not breathing, but has a heartbeat. So is he alive or dead? So unequivocally, all the Rishonim paskin ad chotmo. No questions asked. We paskin ad chotmo. So let's think about it. If this Gemara, what is this Gemara trying to tell us? The Gemara is not trying to tell us. We established that when we look into an ICU, we're trying to figure out how a person's dead. We have three different levels that we have to go through. We have the definition of death, which is this might be a philosophical notion of Yetzias Neshama, or there are all sorts of secular definitions, somatic integration of wholeness, or all sorts of other different things, right? Which doesn't really help us. That just gives us an idea of what we're looking for. Then we have the physiological function that represents that definition, right? What am I looking for? Am I looking for breathing? Am I looking for heartbeat? That's a physiological, that's a criteria for death. And then I need to know, well, okay, so it's breathing or it's heartbeat. Well, how do I know if the patient's breathing or heartbeat? I have to do a test, okay? I have to do a test. What test am I going to do? I can look at the EKG. I can feel his pulse. I can put my ear, I can put my face against his mouth to see if he's breathing, right? That's a test. So if this Gemara is talking about the criteria for death, what are the physiological functions? We're assuming everyone agrees it has to be Yetzias Neshama. Great. Again, that's not very helpful. But Chazal are going to tell us, what are the criteria? Is it, if the criteria are either chotmo, breathing, or heartbeat, we paskin unequivocally that it's chotmo, that it's breathing, and therefore, if this Gemara is discussing the criteria for death, it's clear as day that a patient who is not breathing then should be considered dead, because if ad chotmo means he's not breathing, he's dead, then there's no questions asked, and that's it. And as I noted before, that I disagreed with the statement of the Rabbanut that this is not complicated, that clearly it can't be quite so simple, that that's not exactly what's going on. So it relates, what's your name? Moshe. It relates a little bit to Moshe's question. The Gemara continues at the end. The Gemara continues a little bit. We can skip down. It says, Amar of Papa. It's four lines from where it gets wide. So he says, Amar of Papa. Machlokes mimata lemala. Aval mimala lemata. Kevin debodek leal chod moshuvin utzarech. Dichsiv kolashar nishmas ruach chayim ba'apav. It says, wait a minute. He says, what's going on? Rashi says, Hachi Garcina, Amar of Papa Machlokas Milamata Lemala, from the bottom up. Right? Well, you have to realize you're uncovering him, you're uncovering the rubble, so what are you uncovering first? So Rashi says, Machlokas Tahanach Tanoi, Demar Amar Ad Libo, Umar Amar Ad Chotmo, Milamata Lemala, Shemotso Derech Margalos of Tchila. You uncover his feet first, right? Ubodek Vaholech Klape Rosho, and you're uncovering more and more till you get to his head. The Maram are believable. So how can you ask is, right? And one says you go to the heart, right? When you go to the heart, and one says you have to go to the nose. So I have a question. So you're uncovering from his feet first, and you're uncovering and uncovering and uncovering, and you get to his chest, right? You get to his chest before you get to his nose, right? That's Mitzias. So you get to his chest, and you feel, and one says ad libo. He has no heartbeat. So he says, so you're dead. And the first Mandamar says what? He says he's not dead. You felt he has no heartbeat. Klal gadol, you can't breathe without a heartbeat. Okay, this is, you can't breathe without a heartbeat. You can't do anything without a heartbeat. Without a heartbeat, you're not, can't do anything. So he says you're checking, and he says, but ad chotmo. So he says you're checking, you uncover his chest, you feel his chest, and there's no heartbeat. And he says you still have to go and check that he's not breathing? Doesn't make sense, right? Yeah.
And you can still have it. You can't feel it, or you can't detect it. It's either there's something in the way or you're not good at detecting it.
Right.
But you don't even need to go ad libo, because you can check, there are signs you can check his legs for a pulse or whatever.
So you don't feel a pulse in his legs. Does that mean that his heart's not beating? I wouldn't go with that simon alone. If the ikar is heartbeat, I would not go with checking his peripheral pulses. Maybe he has peripheral artery disease. I don't know. Maybe his legs are chopped under the building collapse. And so this is not he's not in the ICU. He's under a building. You want to check his heart. You want to check it. It makes sense. But that's not the most accurate. I think everyone would agree that that's not accurate. So, I what you're saying?
Daniel.
I think what Daniel's saying, it makes a lot of sense, right? Because, wait a minute. You're checking for the heartbeat, and you want to find out if he has a heartbeat, but you can't tell. Right? Remember, again, we're under the rubble, and what are our equipment to check his heartbeat with? My ear and my hand. I don't even have a stethoscope till the 1700s. So, I don't really have a lot of equipment with me to check a heartbeat. So what I'm doing is, the first Manda Amar says, no, you check the heartbeat, there's no heartbeat, you didn't feel a heartbeat, you could assume he has no heartbeat. And the second Manda Amar says what? You check, you felt for a heartbeat, you couldn't feel a heartbeat, but it's Yitach and he has a heartbeat. It's Yitach and he has a heartbeat. So I have to go check to see if he's breathing, I don't know. So I'm going to check to see if he's breathing. If I don't feel that he's breathing, and I don't see, if I don't feel a heartbeat, and I don't see he's breathing, I can assume he has no heartbeat. That's what Rashi says. Look at the rest of Rashi. Demaramar belibo yesh lahav kenim yesh bochiyus. The first one says you could tell in the heart if he's alive. Shenishmaso dofekesham, because that's where the neshama knocks. And the neshama is somewhere in the heartbeat. Okay. Umaramar ad chotmo. So why do you have to go check out chotmo? Why are you checking until his nose? He has no heartbeat. The zimnin in chiyus nikar belibo v'nikar bechotmo. Sometimes you can't tell if his heart's beating. I want to know if his heart's beating or not, but I simply can't tell. I don't know if his heart's beating or not, because I don't have the equipment to tell. Had I had the equipment to tell, I would have said, Puzzard, he's dead. Right? If I knew he had a heartbeat, he'd be alive. If he doesn't have a heartbeat, he'd be dead. Right? That's clear, but I don't have the equipment to do it, so I have to go check by his nose. So, but what does that mean? That means that what is this machlokas ad libo and ad chotmo? It has nothing to do with the criteria for death. It has nothing to do with what is the physiological parameter that has to do with Yitzias Neshama, right? We're not looking for breathing versus heartbeat. We're looking for tests. Is this a good test of heartbeat or not? When I check your chest, when I put my hands over the man's chest to see if he has a pulse, do I want to listen? I want to know if he has a heartbeat. The question is that test sensitive or specific enough or not? Am I going to get a good reading on that test? It has nothing to do with the criteria. According to Rashi, everyone agrees that the criteria for death is heartbeat. If he has a heartbeat, he's alive. If he has a heartbeat, he's dead. That's the only thing we care about. But sometimes I can't tell. So if I can't tell, I have to do whatever I can. I have my availability to check in order to do that. So back in the day, you're under a pile of rubble. You have nothing to do. You didn't feel a heartbeat. It doesn't mean anything, according to the first mandamer, right? And therefore, you have to check the nose. According to the second mandamer, no. You checked. It's meaningful enough. Interesting question. Why is that meaningful enough? It's pikuach nefesh. We safik lachumra. Leave that aside. It's not for now. But that seems to be what he says. Okay. So what about the second half of Rav Papa? The second half of Rav Papa says, okay, that's machlokas mimata lelamala. Then it's machlokas ad libo ad chotmo. But if you find his head first, kuli alma lo pligi, that if he stops breathing, that if he's not breathing, sorry, that he is dead. So why should that be? Both opinions say if he's not breathing, he's dead. So why should that be? So Rashi here doesn't tell us. But Rashi before told us that what? Sometimes you can't tell if he's alive by checking his heart. You can check by his breathing. If he's not breathing, you can assume he has no heartbeat, right? That's pshat. So everyone agrees to that. That if he's under a pile of rubble and he's not breathing, you can assume he has no heartbeat. He's under a pile of rubble again. We have nothing available to us. He's not breathing. He has no heartbeat. So kuli alma lo pligi, if you check and he's not breathing, you can assume he has no heartbeat, and therefore he's dead. So what we get from this Gemara is the following. Is that there are two ways to read this Gemara. If you read this Gemara as talking about the criteria for death, right, then it's ad chotmo ad libo, is it breathing or circulation, then it should certainly be breathing. And if so, a patient who's not breathing on his own is dead, and the brain of that patient would be considered to be dead. But if this Gemara, it seems to be what Rashi's saying, is about the tests and not about the criteria, what is the criteria according to Rashi? The criteria according to Rashi is libo, is the heart. You're looking for the heartbeat. We're just arguing about whether the test is sensitive enough or specific enough to get that the heartbeat. And therefore, kuli alma lo pligi, that if he has a heartbeat, then he's going to be alive. And if he doesn't have a heartbeat, then he's dead. But if he's not breathing and has a heartbeat, seemingly you would say from this Gemara that he is alive. So just one quick thing. If you go two pages down, you see the Chacham Tzvi. The Chacham Tzvi actually says this out. Yes, yeah, so we'll see it in the Chacham Tzvi, and then the Chacham Tzvi actually says it. So let's see the Chacham Tzvi say it. And then we'll see in the Chacham Tzvi, and then I'll say it again. But he said it first, so we should quote him. So the Chamsi was asked the following question, having no relevance to brain death, clearly. He was asked the question, woman found a chicken without a heart. She opened up the chicken, there was no heart. So is this chicken a trefa, or do we assume that it lost, or that there was a heart, and it got lost in when you opened up chicken? I don't know, have any of you opened up chickens before? It's a little bit messy. If you don't know what the different body parts are, you can get confused, and they can slip through, and you might not see it. She says, no, there was no heart. So could that be or not? The Chacham Tzvi says, that's crazy. Everyone has a heart. Everything is about the heart. You can't live without a heart. And therefore, she thought she saw all the pieces. She must have missed it. It must have been there. And that's what he wants to say. His argument is you can't live without a heart. That's where this tshuva comes into the brain death debate. So if you look right here, he says, so he's arguing with Rav David Oppenheim. So So most of his tshuva is not comprehensible unless you actually look at Reb David Oppenheim and him writing back and forth to each other. He's just what he's continuously doing is responding to the it's in the tshuva's nishal David, which I didn't bring because it's not relevant to this nekuda. But if you look, he says Masha Kazav Od Behavio Hayi Deperik Basra Deyoma. So Reb David Oppenheim thought from Rashi to say the opposite, and the Chafi says you're just wrong. So Rabbi Oppenheim said, you see from this Gemara, the Gemara says, that it's all about breathing. Rabbi Rashi told you, no, it's right? I already said out of the Chacham Tzvi. But we saw this Rashi. Right, the machlokas is you can't tell in the heart, or you can tell in the heart. Hare hiskim Rashi zalid varenu shan neshama mishkan abalev. He wants to know what the neshama is. Ela deluf amim af shan neshama adayin toch alev ein adefika nikeres belibo. Sometimes you can't tell if it's beating or not. You can't always tell from the outside. The guy is under a building collapse. He's weak. You don't have tools. You can't tell. But if his heart's beating, you can assume that he's breathing. And the point is in Rashi is that we're looking to see if his heart's beating. Now, what's the machlokas ad libo ad chotmo? The machlokas is when I check and I put my hands on his chest, is that sufficient to determine that? What I'm looking at is the test. When I look at the EKG monitor, can I trust that that's an accurate representation of the heartbeat? So we believe that's true. But if you would put your hands on it, would you be able to tell me if he's in regular sinus rhythm, his heart's beating normally? You might be able to, but I certainly can't. I don't think many other people can. But, right, that's less exact. It's less precise. You don't know how his heart's doing. When the machlokas is about the tests, everyone agrees that the criteria is heartbeat, right? If everyone agrees the criteria is heartbeat, that anyone with a heartbeat is alive, and the brain dead patient is alive. If the Gemara is talking about the criteria itself, is it breathing or is it circulation? Then it would be clear that if you're not breathing on your own, you're dead, and the brain dead patient would be dead. Was that clear? So the Chacham Tzvi has just one other nekuda, and just because it's interesting and probably not often quoted in Kedabri Halacha Shirim. When I was in Kedabri Halacha, we never actually had any Makaras from this. So he actually quotes a lot of Zohar. So we'll just take a look at one. It's on the next page. He wants to prove that the heart is important. It's just a fascinating story. If you look at the Zohar Pinchas, Daf Reish Kaf Aleph Amud Aleph. He says, Amar Rabbi Abba, Itkar Namil Lachad Yishmanam Vutzina Kadisha. He remembers hearing this story from Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Dishama Mishmeid Rabbi Eliezer. Yom Achad Asa Lakam Echad Chokim Goy. Okay, so it's Amar Le Saba Saba. So this guy is coming to Rabbi Lazar and asking him the shaylos. Plat bayan bein lemit baminach. Three kashas. Chad deatun amrin dis bnei lechu beis makdash achara. You say there'll be a third beis hamikdash. V'hal lav havo lemivne el trei simni. Says and there's only going to be two. And he quotes pesukim. Bayis rishon or bayis sheni. Bayis shlishi lo tishkach baraisa. You don't find any remnants to a bayis shlishi. V'hamad dehavale lemivne kvar idbenun and whatever had to be built was already built. Ula olam les beyotir and there's not going to be any more. The Hare Trei Bata Yisrael Karol Ankar. The pasuk says, "Echtiv Gadol Yeb Kavod Habayis Hazeh Achron Min Arishon." Only two. So what are you waiting for? Third Beis Hamikdash. Not really our issue. The second one is V'tu Da'atun Amrin Da'atun Kraven Lamalka Yilo Yotir Mikol Shar Amin. You guys say that Yisrael, you're closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu than everybody else. Man Demitkriv Lamalka Yuchad Yotir Yuchad Itadir or Yotir. Whoever's closer should be happy more frequently, or more frequently. So below tzara, below dechilu, below dechiku, you should have a better life. V'ha'atun b'tzara b'dochka b'yigona toder yotir mikol b'nei alma. Ebnei Yisrael, take a look. You guys are in tzara, and it's always terrible for you. How can you possibly think you're closer to the melech? V'anan lo yitkarif on tzara b'dochka b'yigona klal. And we're doing great. So anan kreven l'al k'ayla, we're closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu than you are. V'atun rechikin minei, v'al da islachu tzara b'dochka evla b'yigona madla yitlan. And it's because you're farther away that you have all these tzaras. The third kasha he asks him, he says, you want to be healthy and therefore you only eat kosher, and we're talking more healthy than you are, and we don't eat kosher. So what's pshat? So Rabbi Eliezer looks at him, and it skips a couple pages here. Rabbi Eliezer looks at him and he turns into a pile of bones, and he's like, I have a lot of chutzpah. And then it says that he was mitzar. He didn't know the answer to these three kashas. It's good kashas. So Eliyahu HaNavi was miskala to him, and he said, already in the Mesifta Derekiah we dealt with these kashas. So how do we deal with the middle kasha? Right? You guys think you're closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam. and therefore, and than we are. He says, but then you should be happier. Anyway, so he says, Shel to Achra, the middle Shaila. Divadai anan craving the Malke lo yotir mikol sharamin. We're certainly closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam than all the other nations. Vadai hachi yudi Yisrael avadon kutz abrichu liba the kol alma. We're like the heart of all the other nations. Vehachi inun Yisrael bin sharamin kaliba bin shayfin. Yisrael among the other nations is like the heart among the Avarim. Just like the rest of the body cannot function a moment without the heart, the other nations wouldn't be able to survive without Yisrael. So it just shows you the phenomenal breadth of Chacham Tzvi's knowledge. You don't really associate him with this. But he was medayek from here that you see that you can't live without a heartbeat. Had nothing to do with it. But he was medayek from here that you can't live without a heartbeat. So it was just, and he says, he apologized. He says, no, you said, look, normally, I won't look for Mar Machaymis in the Zohar. It seems a little bit strange. It's not my Mahalach. I know, the Chacham Tzvi, he always writes Samach Tes at the end of his name. He was a little bit more Sfardi than some of the other Ashkenazi Achronim. But he says, it's not my normal Mahalach to quote from the Zohar. But here he says, it doesn't seem to be so to the Gemara at all. It just supports it. So whenever it supports it, we should quote from the full breadth of Jewish knowledge. Yeah.
And the other way to read the Gemara would be sort of based on what faulty medical knowledge, right? That someone could live without a heart.
Right, but they saw... So the problem is... They knew that wasn't true, seemingly. I mean, unless they thought they just can't feel. Meaning, again, you have to say that they have no heartbeat, they feel no heartbeat, and yet they think it could live. We have no reason to think that, and it's certainly not. You could read the Gemara that way.
Isn't that how the other rabbi was reading it? He was asking about the chicken. He thought the chicken really could have been alive.
So Nish al-David says, no. It can't be that you can live without a heart. The Machlaikas comes out to be, you have to have something that's pumping the blood throughout the body, so it must be something else. Right? And so does that make it in the veil of Trefo? And then it gets into a completely other, different topic. But what would be the status of that chicken? But not our issue. Yeah.
It could be that just, I mean, I'm not really convinced on that, right? Because it's, it could be just one definition. That's it. If the heart stops, you're dead. Or it could be that if the breath stops, you're dead. I mean, it could be just speaking metaphorically. I mean, it doesn't, like, if this stops, you're dead. Or it could be if the breath stops also, you're dead.
So, if that's true, I wouldn't need Rashi. Right? Rashi's telling me that you're really looking for... you could suggest that. Rashi's not saying like that.
I'm just asking on the Zohar.
The Zohar is not the world's best Raya. The Zohar is not the world's best Raya. Enachlami. And then Rabbi David Oppenheim responds, he goes, no, Yifshar Lameikam, what does Lameikam mean? It doesn't mean it can't live. It means it can't be healthy. He says, if you look Medayik in the Zohar, it says, Yifshar Lameikam. He says, oh, and that's Rabbi Lezer in the Medrash and Mishlei holds like this, and he puts the two together. It's tremendous, Mekiyas. But, right, Enachlami. Yeah.
So Korda Rabdan Amnar, so how does he read the Machlokas in Yuma?
He misread it. He only quoted one line. He said, oh, you see, from the Gemara that the Nishim is important. So you can live without a heart.
I mean, why not?
It's just half a line.
Why not the heart, though?
Hmm?
Why did you choose that? Meaning the Gemara, if you understand,
he wants to prove that this chicken was
right, but if you understand the Gemara as just a machlokes, so what sign is necessary? So the Gemara has a machlokes about that.
Right, so how do you understand Rav Papa then?
Right, so you can say, why did he choose that side of the Gemara?
Again, it's not his Nakuda at all. He just threw it out there as an extra. He doesn't really defend his Nakuda at all. Yeah.
It's interesting. If the heartbeat is what defines life and death, so then... And
criteria, according to Rashi.
Have a heartbeat without breathing, and how would checking if the guy under the breathing tell you if
there's a heartbeat? Only today you can have, that's what I said before, only today can you have a heartbeat without breathing. Right? Brain death is only a shaila once you have a ventilator. Right? Once I can, you can't. Right? But once I can supplant your breathing with some technological machine, then it'll work. Just point out that the Rishalmi and most of the Rishonim had a different gears of this Gemara. They did not have ad chotmo and ad libo, they had ad chotmo and ad tiburo. The word lave does not appear in Yerushalmi. Most of the Rishonim don't have lave at all. And it says tiburo. Tiburo seemingly refers to the stomach, the belly button, the something. So what exactly is that looking for? So Dr. Avram Steinberg, who was one of the big proponents of accepting brain death in halacha, thinks that what you're really looking for is breathing. And you want to see if the stomach's moving up and down. And if the stomach's moving up, right, was when you breathe, your stomach moves up and down also. And that's what the Gemara, that's what the Yerushalmi and other Yerushalmi are looking for. It's very hard to understand it that way, I think, with the Nishtaiti at least, that it seems very difficult. The Machlokas says, which is a better test? You're going to go listen to his mouth, or you're going to watch his stomach? I think cool down, I'm a little pliggy. You can't say stomach, but you're still going to check. It's not a good, that doesn't seem like, I don't even see the tzad of the machlekas to say, oh, one will say atiburo, and that's enough. So what does tiburo mean? I don't know. But if you look in the Yefeyanayim in the back of the Gemara in Yuma, he's like, yeah, it all means the same thing. Tiburo means the torso, and you're checking the most sensitive place to see the heartbeat. They meant tiburo, or libo is more accurate, libo is more specific. So the Yefeyanayim says there's nothing doing, there's no machlokas between the Bavli and Yerushalmi, you can't make much of it, nobody ever had made much of it until recently. So fine. So that's how you read the Gemara Yuma. And it's just important to point out, right after this on page 8 is just a piece from Livy Eschein, from Avad Yosefer on the Mishnah Berurah. So Mazalman points it out. They just make the Ha'ara that none of this is really, except for the theoretical concept of where a person's dead or not, is Halach Lamaisa. We don't check the nose and check the heart anymore, right? Because we have technological means to say that we could bring these people back if we have the ability to do so. So Halach Lamaisa today, if you find someone under a building collapse, you still Mechal Shabbos B'daraisa unless you happen to be the paramedic who can actually ascertain whether the person's dead or alive. Today we assume that our knowledge is so much more specified, it gets into a fascinating question of how do we understand people being dead in the past. We're not going to get into that right now. But Halach Lamaisa at least, and he says, if you look at the arrows, the Chen Shamati B'Shem Yididi Agrashas Orbach, Shedin Zayhai B'Smani B'Zman HaRishon Shalai Salem Epsharas L'Tabal B'Cholos L'Nasham. We didn't have the ability to deal with these patients. Today we do have the ability to deal with these patients, and therefore, Halach Lamaisa, you don't check breathing, you don't check heart, you don't check anything. You try to get him out there as quick as possible and get him to a hospital. B'daraisa, even if he fails all the siman of the Gemara, because today we can do more than that. So that's just an important halacha lemaisa in the Kuta. So just the next page, Tshuva the Marasham. The Marasham was asked the following question. This is sorry, it's in Chelek Vav, Sim Chav Dalin. He was asked the following question. Somebody died there of Shabbos, and they wanted to do the Kavura before Shabbos. And they rushed to do the Tara and the Kavura, and somebody said they thought, one of the Chevra Kadisha members thought that they heard the mace moaning. And they ignored it, and they just did the Tara and buried the person. And everybody else in the Chevra Kadisha said, no, that's not the mace moaning. I don't know if anybody's dealt with Taras or Chevra Kadishas. There are, sometimes there are juices that still float around the person's inside, and it makes noises when they shift around. It's true, it does that. And so they said, no, that's all it is. And so they asked the Marasham after Shabbos, I think it says when it was, I don't remember. It says, do we need to have a kapara? The person was clearly dead by the time the kfur happened, but should they have held off a little bit? And they asked the Marasham, do they need to do kapara and tshuva for what they did? And he says, well, look, you checked if he was breathing, right? So we assume that nothing else is going on. And if you look at the highlighted section, he said, but we checked, he wasn't breathing, so why do we have to check anymore? Right, the person's laying there, he's under the rubble, we can check from the top down, all we have to do is check if he's breathing. Right, we assume that if he's not breathing, nothing else is working. Right, we assume that it's true. But if you have a reyesa b'fanecha that it's not true, then you can't rely on breathing. Relying on breathing, according to Rav Papa, was a rove. We assume that that's a rove gomer that we're going to not even save this person on Shabbos. It's a rove mukhla. We can say, we don't have to say we assume the person's dead. But when you have a hochacha b'fanecha, he's moaning, right? The person's yelling and screaming. That's why I pointed out in Rashi, nirik doma kemes. If he's yelling and screaming, I don't have to check if he's breathing or if he has a heartbeat. So too, the Baruch Hashem would seemingly say, he's not breathing, but there's an EKG machine beeping like this on the screen. That's a reyesa b'faneinu, that his heart's beating. I don't need to rely on his breathing. I know that he's alive. He's saying breathing is only a simin when that's the only simin I have. But when I have more things in front of me, I'm looking for those other things. So it's clear the Marasham also read this Gemara as looking for a simane misa, as it being about tests, and that we really want to know about the heartbeat or anything else going on in the body, and breathing is just taken as a simplest simin to look at. The next Mar Malcolm here is the Chasam Sofer, true of the Chasam Sofer, Yordea Simin Shin Lamed Ches, which forms almost everybody who writes about brain death, pro, against, or otherwise, quotes this Chasam Sofer to support their position, which is fascinating, because he can't hold all positions, and no matter what position, you can't, it's just funny. Anyway, so the Chasam Sofer was asked the following question. The Duke of Mecklenburg-Schwerin back in the day passed a law, you can't bury someone until 3 days after they died, because they had this problem of burying people alive. the term saved by the bell supposedly comes from this Tkufa, where they used to put bells in the coffin that should the person be buried alive, you can ring the bell and you would take him out, supposedly. Anyway, so this tshuva was from another city in Germany. It's actually from Moses Mendelssohn. He doesn't say that anywhere in the tshuva, but we know... Moses Mendelssohn is over there. Sorry, take it back. This is actually a tshuva from Maritz Chiyas. He doesn't say that anywhere in the tshuva, but the Maritz Chiyas himself published it in the Maritz Chiyas, but he's basing it on the Svara of Moses Mendelssohn. And he goes through the whole thing, and he says, no, once we ask... So the shaila that the Chasam Sofer was asked... It was just fascinating. He said, look, so the assumption was pasut. We're going to leave the guy for 3 days. We're not going to bury him, goch nefesh. But can the kohen, can the doctor who's a kohen go in after 3 days to check that he's dead? That was his shaila. So it's really Kumas Kohanim shaila. And the question is, well, are we assuming he's dead or are we mesupik he's dead, right? We allow Kohanim to be on Hatzalah because they're hoping the person's alive. They're trying to save his life. So here, do we assume the person's dead or not? And the Chasam Sofer says, no. We assume this person's dead. We use the standard assumptions that we always use. We use the standard criteria we always use. Person's dead. Forget the kohen. You have to bury him immediately, and you can't wait these 3 days. At the end of the tshuva, after he signs his name, he says, incidentally, it's mutter for the kohen to go, because it would be a meis mitzvah. Don't tell the kohen this, but it would be a meis mitzvah, because otherwise they can't bury him, so if he's the only doctor around, you can have the kohen go and do it. But he says, but the man's dead. We're only allowing him to a meis mitzvah. So he says, doesn't make a difference. We pass on this person's dead no matter what. And if you look at the line that's highlighted, he says, Aval, kol se'achar se'mutal ke'evin domim. Person is lying still. Ve'ein bo shum defika. And he has no heartbeat. Ve'im achar kach badal anashima. And he's not breathing. Ein lanu ela divrei tarasenu akadosha shu'u meis. Ve'lo yalinu oso. Ve'ametame lo imukoin loke. Achar asra. This person is dead. He's lying still. Doesn't appear to have a heartbeat, doesn't appear to be breathing, he's dead, no questions asked. Now, how could this possibly have been a source of machlokas? It's interesting. If you turn the page, if you look at the top of this page, it's also a discussion of brain death. And if you look in the 14 year, Tshuvas Chasam Sofer Yerdeh Shin Lamedches, Mivueres Kvias Hamavis. Vitshuva Zu Huva Bepitzchei, Tshuva Biyerdeh Shin Zayn, fine. Rak Miktsasav. Nearly, Shahar Bechachme Atorah Shebizmaneinu Histam Chol Tshuva Zu, Kshepasu Kiloshana Chasam Sofer, who at the beginning says, "Dehakol tali b'neshima, ha, k'mevor b'yuma daf behei," that everything's tali whether he's breathing or not. If he's not breathing, he's dead. Now, realize in the time of the Chasam Sofer, there was no such thing. You couldn't medayek. There was no metzias again, where you have a heartbeat without breathing. So it's hard to medayek from Chasam Sofer, but you can medayek from the last sentence where he says you have to have all three gone. Aval k'sharoim es kol atshuva, bor she'ein hakol tali b'neshima sa'af l'chud. It's not all tali breathing. Right? There's a tziruf. Mudal kevin domim, einbo defiko, ve'achakach batal anashima. Ve'az asakas anashima yakova, u'bevadei shakol bono gidras rashi, meseches yoma, that we just saw. Shisham gudek shakol ha'shela, adeichanu bodek, it should say pehei, not pegimu, adeichanu bodek u'rak im domi l'meish, she'eno meish zivarov. As shalu adeichanu adas ames, right? It has to be that he's also not having a heartbeat. So why am I showing you this? This is actually, you probably won't guess who wrote this. But if you keep looking, I mean, if you turn the page, it says. But if you look at the next, the arrowed section here, I don't know if everyone has it in front of them. It says, V'im kein, masam, so according to that approach, a brain-dead person has a heartbeat, he would be alive, right? And therefore taking his organs would be usher. V'im kein, masam, mikubal, achshav, halacha, lemaisa, etzal, arofim, haminaskim, shemisas, hamoach, wasimen, hamoderni, lekvias, hamavis, ein la, shum, basis, bahalacha. Elo, ein, yishayachro, galzeh. Right? Okay, he goes through the whole thing. This was actually written by Rav Moshe David Tendler in Tafshin Lamed Beis in 1973, seemingly before he changed his mind. And here he is advocating fiercely that a brain-dead patient is alive and that taking out his organs is usher, and that anyone who would disagree, ain lo shum basis b'halacha, to make that determination. Incidentally, Rav Moshe, by that time, had published two tshuvas on this topic, and both of them seemingly, we're not going to go through Rav Moshe, we're not going to have time, both of them, he seems to say that he's seemingly openly talking about brain death, and he seems, and it's very clear as day, we'll see one of them inside, that the brain dead patient is alive, and therefore taking out his organs is killing him. And Rabbi Tendler agreed a couple years later. So what I have after here is just the piece from the... Yeah.
So that the fact of being still, does that have any relevance?
The fact that?
Being still in heaven domain, does that have any cases?
Yeah.
Just because of that factor alone would be...
We'll talk about that in a second. So this is just a part by the Rabbanut. This is actually the Rabbanut letter. Just in a matter of time, we'll skip this, just take my word for it. The Rabbanut is interested in looking at whether the patient's breathing or not, and they try to read this Gemara very differently. They usually, I haven't seen any place where the Rabbanut specifically tries to deal with this Rashi and explain Rav Papa, but there have been other attempts to do so, and that Rav Papa's coming la'afuke, other things. And therefore, they want to read that Gemara as talking about criteria for death, and the only thing that matters is breathing. The only thing that matters is breathing, and if you're not breathing on your own, you're dead. And they say that's all that matters. A functional criteria, the only thing that matters is whether you're breathing or not. And that's how they want to read it. I just don't want to give them a short shrift, so you can see the revenue piece inside. So the next Mara Malcolm on this, and Dr. Avram Steinberg points out, we don't really have a good discussion in Chazal. You have a question? We don't really have a good discussion in Chazal about when a normal, like normal natural death. We don't have any discussion about normal natural death. We only have these very interesting topics. And so if you look at the Mishnah and Alos, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Vav, in some places it's Mishnah Zayin, it's the same Mishnah, just depends on, I don't know how they ordered the Mishnahs. It says, Other Meinu Matamei Achetei Tzei Nafsho, a person does not cause Tumas Meis until his soul departs. Vafilu Meguyad, Vafilu Goseis, and even if he's Meguyad, and the Mefarshim here say that's from the word Godu Ilana, he's cut up, he's bleeding, he's dying. Vafilu Goseis, he's more naturally dying. Zokik Liyubim, Potter Minei Yibum, right, he can cause Yibum and Potter Minei Yibum, Ayin last year's Zalimud, 2 years ago. Machal b'truma, posel b'truma, he's alive for all purposes. He can cause truma to be eaten or pass truma to be eaten. I'm not going to go through that right now. He's alive. Kol zman that he's alive, and he can. He has ramifications for truma and yibum and everything else. Acha teitzei nafsho, you're not dead until you're dead. That's not really helpful. Again, what does that mean? Acha teitzei nafsho, I knew that. V'chein behema v'chaya in mitamin acha teitzei nafsho. Animals also, they can be tumas nevela. There is no tumas nevela until they die. Wonderful. So, four lines from the bottom up. Hudzu Rashehem, their heads were cut off, were severed. So, who is they? So, we're going to assume that it refers to everyone in this Mishnah. This is Mechalkas Rishonim, whether it refers to just the Behemah V'chaya or to the Adam also. Let's assume it refers to everybody. So, Hudzu Rashehem. So, if their heads were severed, Af Al Pishem Efarkasin, even though their bodies are doing Pirkus, which is a type of a twitch, it's still moving a little bit, Tmein. They are tame now. Seemingly, they're dead as soon as their head is removed, even if they're mefarkes. And so now the Mishnah assumes that you've never seen such a thing, or hopefully most people reading this Mishnah have not seen such a thing, so they're trying to find you a more common parallel. Kigon hazanav shel alatashi mefarkeses, that the tail of a lizard, when you cut it off, still twitches. I'm going to take the Gemara's word for it. I'm not going to chop off anybody's head, and I'm certainly not going to cut off any lizard's tail. But apparently cutting off lizard's tail is more common, and therefore the tail still wiggles. We know that that's not chiyus, it's just wiggling after it's been cut off. So too, after the head's been severed, even though the body is still twitching, still moving, this person is dead right now. Okay, wonderful. So how does that fit in with what we said before? So we said there were two approaches to determining death. Either it's about breathing, and if you're not breathing on your own, you're dead. And therefore, this person is dead. Why? He's not breathing. His head is in another room. We cut off his head. His head is separate. You can't breathe without a head, right? You can't take a breath. It's gross. It's a little bit graphic. But you can't breathe without a head. And therefore, this person's not breathing, and therefore he's dead. And that's how the Rabbanut assumes this Mishnah means, and that's how they explain. Now, the problem with this functional definition of breathing is as follows. Is if it's all about breathing, well, what if I have a patient who everything's okay with him other than he can't breathe? So you can have two such people, and there are many types of such people, but there is a famous actor, I know no one's ever heard of him, of these movies, Superman. Christopher Reeve used to play Superman back in the day, and he fell off a horse. And Christopher Reeve fell off a horse and broke his neck. And he broke his neck, and he severed his phrenic nerve. The phrenic nerve is a nerve that goes from the brain to the diaphragm that the signal from the brain to breathe goes through. Now, after a lot of therapy, his brain was fine. He could think, he could talk, he could lecture at MIT. He did. But he couldn't take a breath on his own because his brain was sending signals. It just couldn't get there. It was being blocked. So he actually had a diaphragmatic pacer made for him. The man gave a lot of tzedakah and a lot went to spinal cord research and such and developed a lot of research for people with spinal cord injury. So instead of sending a signal from his brain, he had a machine next to him that would send a signal to his diaphragm, which would initiate a breath. Right, but that's completely artificial. He could not breathe on his own. He suffered from the irreversible cessation of spontaneous respiration. It was irreversible. His phrenic nerve was cut, or severely damaged, I believe. It was not coming back, and he could not breathe on his own. But yet he could talk, and he could lecture at MIT. So now what are you going to tell me? So, yeah.
Why is that considered being his own? If the life is in the lungs or in the heart, then that is him. He
So the Rabbanut goes through great lengths to try to show you that breathing on your own means breathing on your own. That's not Pashut.
I'm saying if the life is not in the brain, because they do
no, the Rabbanut is assuming that what you're testing for is breathing. Chazal told us criteria for death. The criteria for death is you're not able to breathe on your own, or you don't have a heartbeat. They said if you can't breathe on your own, you're dead. He can't breathe on his own.
Chazal assumed that life was in the lungs, but so if the lungs are working, the life is working, then death is you are breathing, that is you.
So you're assuming that he was breathing?
No, if the pacemaker is causing him to breathe, then he's alive and he's breathing.
Well, he's not alive, but he's artificially being kept alive. The machine's really alive, it's not him.
It's causing his diaphragm to move and breathe, but his diaphragm and his lungs are the ones that are breathing.
So if I take a corpse out of the ground and I stick a diaphragmatic pacer in him and then the lungs expand and contract, he's going
to
be dead, he's going
to
be alive.
According to what Chazal is saying, the life is no lungs, why not? You're assuming that his brain and his mind are what he is, but
no.
The assumption is that's not true.
Not exactly. No, I'm assuming is that it's a functional criteria. It's a functional. Can he take a breath or not?
He could. If something causes him to do it.
No, he can't do it at all on his own. I mean, I can pump, if I take a corpse and pump air into his lungs, and I open and close like under those, the bellows, you're not going to tell him he's alive, right? And even if you tell me it's a heartbeat, if I take a corpse and tilt him like this and tilt him like this until blood circulates throughout his body, you're not going to tell me that's circulation, right? The fact that I take his blood circulating... But that's a lot of Shmei circulation. So if I take a bellows and put it in, that's nothing. It has to be completely on... It has to be at least somewhat on his own. It's not completely on his own. It has to be at least some shemets of his own. He had nothing. Let's assume it's not completely true, but let's assume he had nothing. And if he's talking that such a person could exist. So you could tell me he's dead, and he's metame ba'ol, and he's telling you I'm not metame ba'ol, but he is metame ba'ol, right? How do you know he's not metame ba'ol? I was talking to Rabbi Bleich about this, and I said, you know, how do you know he's not dead? I mean, he was playing a game. I said, because he's talking to me. He said, if Eliyahu Navi comes to me in the dream, does that mean he's alive? I said, I don't know, I would ask him. But he goes, how do you know talking is a simen chiyus? Meaning, if you hold this person, so you could either say he's dead, or you're up the creek. It means that really, 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 you don't really hold breathing. You hold breathing because of the brain. Now, that's a little bit difficult to say, right? Because you can't see that from the Gemara. So, Rabbi Tendler tried to deal with this issue. He was aware of this issue, right? This happened with Superman, also with polio victims. People who had polio, that polio is a degenerative nerve. The nerves start dying from the outside in, and eventually the people can't move. They're paralyzed, right? Remember a few pictures of FDR. And eventually their respiratory muscles don't work either, although their brains are fully functional. And so they used to put them in iron lungs, which was a primitive form of a ventilator, which would help them breathe on their own. Again, they probably had something left. But you could imagine a patient with nothing, and they were completely breathing on their own. It's not as elegant as a ventilator was this iron machine that they would go in. So Rabbi Tendler argued that, said, that can't be. That person can't be dead because he's talking to me, he's moving, he's conscious, it's hard to say he's dead. So he says, so what does it mean? He said, you look at the Mishnah in Olos, and it says the person's decapitated.
Remember, what question are we dealing with in Olos now? Like, the issue that we're...
Why is when his head is removed, he's dead? The Mishnah is clear that when the head is removed, he's dead. Why is that true? So it could be because he's not breathing. And Kulei Amalo Pligi, he's not breathing. But is that enough reason to say he's dead? So if it's all totally in breathing, you have this big problem. So Rabbi Tendler said, no. It doesn't mean that the head, you know, it doesn't make a difference whether the head's detached or not detached. It makes a difference whether the head is controlling the body. And if you look in a bunch of different places, Rabbi Tendler says this. This is, the next piece is from a piece in Jewish Review in 1990. It's an article called Halachic Death Means Brain Death. And he says, so watch this, in this section that I bracketed off the bottom, he says, he's trying to prove that when organs aren't fully working anymore, sending a signal connected in some way, they're considered to be separate and distinct. She says, what we have in this latter case, a body part which is halakhically detached, i.e. dead, even though it remains anatomically connected. By analogy, the cerebral blood flow studies, right, no blood flowing to the brain, demonstrate the very same thing with respect to the brain, that the brain is halachically detached, even though it is anatomically connected. And this is what is meant by physiological decapitation. So the Mishnah talks about decapitation, and Tendler wants to say no. He's extending this not only actually detached, but also physiologically detached, meaning it's no longer functioning as part of the body. Now, he mentions blood flow studies, that there's no blood flowing to the brain. In this country, at least, there is no requirement whatsoever to do a blood flow study to see if there's blood flowing to the brain. To determine brain death. In fact, a couple of years ago, the American Academy of Neurology Committee on Brain Death, Dr. Wijdzik, who's the head of that committee, actually argued against doing these blood flow studies because he said, look, the patient's dead. So you're going to do a blood flow study and show this blood flow, you're just going to confuse people. So don't confuse people, don't do the study. But we don't do it. But he's Rabbi Tendler is assuming that when the brain no longer controls the body, that's when the person's dead. And that's what the Mishnah Zaharalos is telling me. When the brain no longer controls the body, then the patient's dead. He continues, this, the next page is from a piece in JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, that Rabbi Tendler was a co-author on with Frank Veith and a whole bunch of other chassid people in 1977. And if you look at the bracketed section, there's a whole, this is the, it's called a status report of the medical and ethical considerations of brain death. It says, complete destruction of the brain, which includes loss of all integrative, regulatory, and other functions of the brain, can consider physiological capitation, and thus a determinant per se of death of the person. Because the brain is no longer functioning to integrate the body. So he says, what does the brain do? What makes you a whole person instead of just a collection of organs is that the fact that the brain integrates everything together. The brain integrates everything together, and therefore you're not just a collection of cells, a collection of organs. You're an integrated whole, you're a person. When the brain no longer does that, no longer integrates the whole body, then you are no longer considered to be a full person. Now, and therefore dead. And that's what he says is physiological decapitation. When the brain no longer functions in those functions, no longer takes on those functions. The problem is that the President's Council on Bioethics in 2008 published a white paper, they called it, and called Controversy in the Determination of Death, where they go through, they said, look, in 1981, sorry, Tendler wrote this, was co-author of this paper in 1977. In 1981, the predecessor of the American, President's Council of Bioethics, which had a much longer title about bioethical dilemmas and biomedical something, I forget the commission on something, I apologize, they were the first time said, why is brain death death? I said in 1968, the Harvard Committee just said it was. They didn't give you a reason. So they didn't give you a reason. Why should this be true? So they said, very similar, that when the brain is the what makes you alive is called somatic integration, integration of the body. When the brain no longer functions to integrate the body, then the body is no longer a whole, and therefore you're dead. What the President's Council points out is that that's not true. If you look right here, it's on page 59 of the Council's report. It's available for free on the, or used to be available for free on the web. It might still be available for free on the web when the Council switches every presidency. It changes. If you look at the second paragraph on the left, the neurological standards' early defenders were not wrong to seek such a principle of wholeness. They may have been mistaken, however, in focusing on the loss of somatic integration as a critical sign that the organism is no longer whole. Because even when the brain is not functioning at all, there is still integration of the rest of the body. So it's just simply not true. So if that's why missing the brain is important, it's just not true. Right? If the loss of somatic integration is what makes you dead, and therefore physiological adaptation counts, then we know that's not true anymore. The person is still integrated. The body is still functioning as a whole, even without the brain. So the President's Council has to come up with a new reason of why these people are dead. They could say no. The President's Council actually had two options in front of him. They could say, okay, we were wrong, and all these patients are alive. Or they can come up with a new reason to hold that these patients are dead, and they took the latter approach to come up with a completely new reason nobody ever thought of before them to come up that the patients are dead. You can ayin shum. Yeah.
So we have a mission to all those that says that there's a head is cut off, he's dead, which Rabbi Tendler understands that means that shows that if you can't breathe, then you're dead.
No, Rabbi Tendler assumes that because the head doesn't control the body, you're dead. The Rabbi Newt said breathing, right? Now, the problem with breathing was that you have these kashas on breathing by Christopher Reeve, these polio victims, so it can't be just breathing. So Rabbi Tendler says, no, it's when the body when the brain is controlling the body and integrating it. One of the controls is breathing, and when the brain no longer controls breathing, then the person's dead. If you look, he could, so, yeah.
Sorry, so like Rabbi Tendler would say that
yeah, he says that Beferish. He says that Beferish. If you turn two pages, sorry, Rabbi Bleif's piece got in there in between. If you look at page 22, he says so Beferish. Where's the part where he says so Beferish? It's not actually here. He says that, I'll show you where he says it. If you look at the section right here, he says, thus it can be definitively demonstrated that all brain functions, including the brainstem function, have ceased. The patient is legally dead in Jewish law because he is equated with decapitated individuals whose heart may still be beating. Brainstem functions can be accurately evaluated, fine. And he goes on to say, and that's beferish what they meant, I apologize, I didn't photocopy this page, that's beferish what they meant in the Gemara in Yuma. He's not breathing. Why is he not breathing? Because the brain isn't sending a signal to breathe. If the brain is not sending a signal to breathe, that's why he's dead. Yeah.
So, if you're of Tendler's definition, why wasn't Christopher Reeve a talking?
Because his brain was still controlling something. His brain was still functioning, even though it wasn't controlling breathing. Breathing is not the only thing that it's controlling. It wasn't controlling everything else. if you look at the next page in Rabbi Tendler, so he says the following. Thus, we maintain that the valid definition of death is brain death. The classic respiratory and circulatory death, meaning what we used to wait for, we used to wait till the person stopped moving, is in reality brain death. Everything is really brain death. Irreversible respiratory arrest is indicative of brain death. You're waiting for the person to stop breathing because it means that his brain has stopped sending a signal. That's shot in the Gemara and Yuma. That's shot in the Mishnah and Olos. Really, everything is about brain death. The only real definition is brain death. And really, that's what the Gemara was trying to get at. I apologize, I don't have the accurate quote for that. That's what the Gemara was trying to get at, that the only accurate definition is brain death. And we know that when he stops breathing, we assume that his brain stops sending a signal. He's doma lemeis, nothing else is working, so we have to look, is his brain sending signals or not? He's not breathing, it's because his brain is not sending signals. That's called physiological habitation. But really, the only definition of death is brain death, right? He says... I'm not going to look for it right now, I apologize. But he says that's actually what we're looking for. That's the only real definition. Everything else is just approximating that. The heart stopping per se, it's in the JAMA piece. The heart stopping per se is not indicative of death. It's only indicative of death because the heart or the brain is no longer taking part of the body. Nothing is really, really thing. The only test we're looking for is the part of the is really the brain. Now, the problem is that most of the other posts can disagree, most notably Rav Moshe Feinstein. If you look on the next page, it's in Igros Moshe Yerodea, Simon Kuf Membav. It's written to Rabbi Chaim Dov Berglevsky, used to be a Rebbe here in the Yeshiva. If you look at the bracket section on the right, he says, "D'halo huskar b'gemara v'poskim shaya simen chiyus b'moach." We don't find anyone who ever said that there was any chiyus in the moach whatsoever. "V'lo shayach lomar nishtanu atavayim b'zeh." And you can't tell me that nishtanu atavayim. "D'gam b'mei chazal haya ha'moach po'al ha'pu'ulos k'mo b'zmaninu." The brain hasn't changed. Not sure how he knows that, but he knows that. So we don't find anywhere in Chazal that the stopping of brain function determines death. We don't find such a thing. Rabbi Tendler wants to argue, really, 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 that's the only thing that matters. And Rav Moshe is telling you that can't be what matters. We have to look for a functional criteria instead. Yeah.
How would they
have tested that? I don't know. It's a good question, but Rav Moshe is telling you that no one ever told you about that. Really, what we're looking for is a functional definition. Rabbi Tendler is saying, if you look for a functional definition of breathing, you're going to come up with this Christopher Reeve problem. So it can't be functional. It has to be a functional with a SIBA. Right? It's not breathing on account of the brain not working. Incidentally, while we're here in Rav Moshe, if you just look in the left column, the part that's underlined, he says the following, very similar to the Maharsham. Pretty much, this is what the Maharsham seemingly would have said had he been alive today. V'im kein b'misha roin al-dei ha-electric radiogram, that's an EKG. She'yesh lo ezechius. You see the waves. Harei al-ofen zeh lekashu afilu rov lo mar shu meis. You can't say he's dead because he's not breathing. He is alive even if he's not breathing. So that's pretty clear. Fine. So that's how... Yeah.
So back to the
Mishnah Olos. That's what I like to do. Yes. So we have two explanations for the Mishnah Olos. So far we have the Rabbanu, that it's a functional definition, but we have many kashas on that. There have been many terutzim given to answer that, but it's not clear that's what the Rabbanu meant. And so we have Rabbi Tendler taking something similar along those lines to means it means breathing because of a specific siva. So what about everybody else? When you cut off someone's head, we'll go a little bit fast, I'm sorry. What happens? If everything's about heartbeat, right? We said the Mishnah and the Gemara and Yuma talked about heartbeat. What happens to this person's heartbeat when you cut off his head? So we have ages from the French Revolution, and it seems to be true at least that the heart continues to beat for at least a couple of moments. So if the heart continues to beat at least for a couple of moments, why does the Mishnah say that he's dead right now? He's mitami right now because he's dead right now. Seems to be a tremendous kasha on that mahalach. It seems like it's just wrong. It says that a heart still beating is not chiyus, he's missing his head. So it means that something else is going on. It must be some other definition of death. Don't tell me that death is a stopping of the heartbeat, because we have a patient with a heartbeat who the Mishnah Beferish tells me is dead. So how do you deal with that? But it was beating, in the time of the French Revolution, it happened. The heart still beats for a couple of moments. Fact. We're going to take the French at their word. But just assume that it makes sense. So Rabbi Bleich deals with this issue. I'm not going to read it inside now for lack of time. And he says, really, 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 and you can see how he proves it. He says, what's going on? He says, we have two types of, the Mishnah says, that afal bisha mefarkus, and we have a motion called pirkus, and a motion that's not pirkus. The Mishnah had to tell me, afal bisha mefarkusin, that it's dead, right? The havamina is that any movement, any motion at all is life. Right? Any movement DeRozan at all is life. But Kamash Malon, that the body moving is not life. But any other motion seems to be life. What does that mean? He develops this notion of vital motion. As long as there is vital motion, meaning motion, any motion of the body that promotes the continued biological validity, viability, not validity, continued biological viability of that body, the person is alive. Okay? So any vital motion makes you alive. Breathing, talking, heartbeat, they're all just examples of vital motion. It's not the heartbeat per se, the heart per se that makes you alive, right? It's the heart because it's a sim in the vital motion. When you have a person who's domilamis, ve'enomazis evarov, he's lying there, what vital motion does he have? The only thing he might have is a heartbeat. If one day, hopefully this will happen soon, we'll be able to use artificial hearts to save someone's life, right? We'll develop a plastic something. You'll take out someone's heart and give him a plastic. Going back to that same mahalo before, you can't tell me that's his heartbeat. That's completely plastic. So is he dead because he has no heartbeat? Says no, he has other vital motions. He's walking and talking and breathing. All these things are vital motion. So what's shot in the Mishnah on Olos? What happens when you cut off someone's head? When you cut off someone's head, what happens to his blood flow? The blood starts spreading out everywhere. The blood starts spreading out everywhere because you cut off his head. So he says, why is the heartbeat relevant? The heartbeat is relevant because it's a vital motion. He says vital motion means promoting the continued biological viability of the organism. That means circulating blood. The circulatory system, that's the whole point of the heart. The heart is a pump, not just a pump, but to circulate blood. When you cut off someone's head, the blood is no longer circulating, it's spurting out. So it's even though the heart's beating, that's no longer vital motion, and therefore the patient's dead. He says, that's why Rashi said, Domilamesh Enomazi Zevarov. He knew that he had to be not moving from this Mishnah on Olos, because Rashi assumed that there's two types of movement. There's Pirkus movement and vital movement. And this was not, he had to tell me that this person was not moving to tell me he had no other vital motion. The only question is his heart, is there any vital motion going on whatsoever? And all that I can tell is his heartbeat. So that's the second way to read this Mishnah. The nafgamina is what if you would, Lu Yitzuyer, remove someone or something's head and then connect all the pipes, right? Let's say you would do this to a sheep in an operating room. This was done. We're not going to talk about it. You can write in the book. They did this to a sheep. And under question for Solomon Zalman's Mahalach, which we'll talk about very, very briefly, and the nafkamina is that sheep alive or dead? So Rabbi Leich said, sheep's alive. Rabbi Shachner and Rabbi Willig seem to agree with that approach, because there's still vital motion. The heart is functioning in a vital capacity to circulate the blood. Right, that's the second way to read this Mishnah. Rabbi Solomon Zalman Orbach had a mixed approach, the third approach. He said the following. There are two ways to determine death in Halacha. Normally we say the irreversible cessation of vital motion. When the person's body no longer moves, there's no longer movement whatsoever, a person is dead. Right? Heartbeat is alive. Breathing is alive. Anything that's moving in the vital capacity makes him alive. He says the Mishnah in Olos means something new. If your head's missing, I don't care whatever's going on, you're also dead. According to Rosh Shlomo Zalman, there are two tracks to determine death. Either the irreversible cessation of vital motion or decapitation. Right? Nafgamina is the sheep. Right? The sheep, I reconnected all the tubes, so he still had vital motion, but according to Shlomo Zalman, was missing its head, it's dead. So that's cute, that's interesting. He also said the following. If every single cell of the brain would be dead, every single cell of the brain would be dead, and in dead, l'chor he means al-pidin, which means either basar sharofa goro or basar shenifrach betziporin, meaning it's falling apart, it's gangrenous, then such a person would be considered as if his head was missing. If the brain looked like that, it would be as if his head was missing. So he said, if such a thing would happen, then it would be that such a person's, then it could be that a person's heart could be beating, but it's as if his head was missing and he would be dead. So he said, if that's what happens in brain death, so be it. If it doesn't happen in brain death, so then I'm sorry. And fact is, that's not what happens in brain death. So although Rosh Shlomo Zalman was willing to concede the point that decapitation, he conceded 2 points. First of all, decapitation is a separate definition, a separate criteria for death. Maybe even the definition of death. Missing a head is completely different. He also then said that not only missing your head, but missing the whole brain being dead is just similar to decapitation. The only shaila is, does that happen or not? Whenever it should happen, according to Shlomo Zalman, if the heart's beating, the patient would be dead. And if it's not beating, and regardless of whether the heart's beating or not, if it's not the metzias, so then the person would be alive because his heart's beating. So in all brain dead patients, the brain does not look like that. They've done neuropathology studies. Many of the cells are not in fact dead, and they're certainly have not reached the level of basar sharofa goro or basar shenifrach betziporin, and so that won't be true. So we saw three different ways to define death. We saw the Rabbanut's approach of breathing. We saw Rabbi Bleich representing the other poskim. This is the same approach as the Tzitz Eliezer, Rabbi Eliashiv, Shlomo Zalman, Rav Vosner. Seems to be many of the Goliath poskim. And then we saw the approach of Shlomo Zalman, who else something different. Nafkamina is in brain death, according to Rabbanut. The patient would be dead, according to Rabbi Tendler's view of the Rabbanut. It's not really his view of the Rabbanut. It's a separate view, but I grouped them together. It makes sense. The patient would also be dead. According to Rabbi Bleich and the other poskim, he would be alive. And according to Shlomo Zalman, he would be alive until such time that his brain would become rotten in such a way, which doesn't happen to Metzias. Nafkamina, can you take out this patient's organs or not? If he's alive, you cannot. And if he's dead, then you may. All right. Okay.
Can I actually
what do we pause here? They push stop.